Hello, listeners. This week's episode is brought to you by Someday Saints. Gina Fensterer is the founder of SomedaySaints.com, and she runs a blog over on the site. She also has products to purchase, which are really adorable. Anything from great saint quotes on posters to printables. You'll have to go and check it out. So she can also be found on Facebook, Instagram, and she has an Etsy shop. But I highly recommend that you hit her site at SomedaySaints.com and see all the beautiful things she's producing.
We are women encouraging and equipping women to universally and uniquely serve Christ in their feminine vocation.
By embracing joy, laughter, freedom, and friendship, we are seeking to thrive in the trenches of our domestic churches.
Welcome to Thriving in the Trenches podcast. This is Becky Carter.
And this is Megan Schreiber. You're listening to episode number 52, and we will be discussing the sexual revolution, and not just the era that coined the moniker, but the actual movie with the same title. Joining us today is Alana Newman. Alana is a Catholic convert, mother of three, a songwriter and recording artist, and narrator of the new film, Sexual Revolution, 50 years since Humanae Vitae. She's also an advocate for donor-conceived people and started the online story collective, The Anonymous Us Project. A big advocate for national family planning, Alana teaches the Billings ovulation method and resides in Louisiana. Welcome to the podcast, Alana.
Thank you, Megan.
Alana, so glad to have you. I actually was born and raised in Louisiana, so it's always nice. Yes. Down south in Baton Rouge. So, but this is not about me. This is about you. So I am going to invite you to tell our listeners a little bit about just your everyday life and maybe how you got to that point.
I've got a 6, 4, and 2-year-old, and right now they're in Montessori. So I get a little bit of free time to do stuff like this, thanks to the movie. You know, we've got this movie to promote that we've been working on for 7 years. And the movie wasn't really my idea. It was my husband's idea. It started as a journey to find my biological father, who was an anonymous sperm donor. And it was the Catholic teaching on sexuality and human reproduction that brought me in. The only thing that I knew about my biological father was hair and eye color. And then I found out through a little bit of research that he was Catholic, raised Catholic, I should say, and was of Polish descent. And so I had this big conversion about 4 or 5 years ago that brought me into the church. And my life today as a Catholic is very different than my life in my early 20s when I was living in San Francisco and, you know, I was an art school hipster in San Francisco. And so I don't know, it's been a really big journey and I'm just kind of still learning how to be Catholic, but doing the movie and getting involved with people like Helen Alvarez and Women Speak for Themselves, like they've taught me a lot about what it means to be a strong Catholic woman. And
you know, when I was talking to Becky and some other friends about your story and the movie, you know, I would say, wow, she's, you know, she really lived this life of completely, you know, an atheist. I know you were
I went to atheist club meetings in downtown San Francisco.
Yeah. Like card carrying. Yes. The real deal, like handing out particular books around the Christmas season. I think I read that somewhere.
I would give people copies of Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion as Christmas presents.
In some ways, I like our listeners to hear that because it we can often fall into this trap of like, oh, wow, look at this, this amazing, you know, devout Catholic woman who's really striving to live out the teachings. And you are, not saying that you're not, but to know that you've come from a place so far and so foreign and so opposite. Because oftentimes I think, you know, we can have listeners who know somebody or has a child who is so far from where they hope their child would be. And we just have to press into God's goodness and all of that because he loves them so deeply and he's always calling his children home all the time. So you know, you really have only been in the Catholic Church for what, 4 or 5 years? Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. Gosh, it's amazing. and the amount of graces that he's poured into this. So I was fortunate enough to see this movie. What I thought was really fascinating about it, and what was a huge takeaway for me, was what I would call the backstory to Humanae Vitae, right? So I was born in 1969, so that whole world was not part of who I was at all. And so growing up, I always heard the term Humanae Vitae and knew that it was something important, but I didn't even know what prompted it to come about. And I think that was a really big piece of the movie, to really see kind of what was going on in the culture, how things were shifting through that really prompted this, this teaching. So I know you guys co-produced this with Springtime Production. Am I saying that right? So a co-produced movie. And was this the image or the vision from the beginning, was to really kind of tell this whole story of the backstory and the why the Humanae Vitae, and then the real teaching of Humanae Vitae? Was that the overall vision?
The vision changed several times, and we had to make a decision on which direction the movie would go and what was most interesting. And so I think the producer, Daniel De Silva, figured out what is most interesting to the public. And he actually wasn't married. It is not married. So so he's not familiar with NFP. This is all kind of new information to him. But he did teach theology of the body for a long time, and good Catholic guy. But we kind of had to make a decision. There was a lot of interesting things. And so there's kind of a lot of people who teach theology of the body and who teach NFP, but nobody really, we just couldn't think of anybody who knew the timelines and the histories of the founders, the people who discovered NFP, John and Evelyn Billings, and then Dr. Brown. James Brown is actually his name. It's funny, but his name is James Brown. And nobody really knew the story of who invented the pill, and it was actually, the pill was the brainchild of Margaret Sanger, who everybody knows is the founder of Planned Parenthood. So she thought of the pill, she financed the pill, or found somebody else to finance it. And she was the one who told Dr. Pincus, I want it to be a pill. I want women to take it. I want a woman to be able to take it secretly so that her husband doesn't know about it and all this stuff. And we just, I think the reason we went with this angle is it's so interesting how like the pill and NFP developed kind of side by side. Like it was basically at the very same time. And in Dr. James Brown actually was working for the people who were doing the pill originally. And then he discovered, whoa, this is hurting women's bodies. I don't want to be a part of this. And so he switched over and started helping the NFP team. And it was just a small group of people on both sides. And I wanted people to think of it as in terms of teams. Like, which team do you want to be on? Do you want to be on the rapey, evil pill team, who they went to lunatic asylums and were experimenting on women in that way? Or do you want to be on the NFP team, who, the super happy couple? John Billings absolutely adored Evelyn Billings. And he just went around and started listening to women, like as if they had something meaningful to say themselves about their own bodies, as if they had an intelligence about them that was worth listening to. And of course we do. And he just started like hearing the stories and asking them questions about their body. And that's how NFP was developed, by giving women a chance to speak for themselves.
That's really wonderful. Knowing that background, and that Margaret Sanger developed the pill so that people wouldn't get pregnant, but then that didn't necessarily work exactly, I think, the way she hoped that would work. And now we're having to, fix the other side of that problem. But I would like to know, so now that the movie has been released, what type of feedback are you guys getting from those who have seen it?
The feedback's just now coming in because we just released it for the first time on July 25th, so on the 50th anniversary of Humanity Day. And the feedback is people seem to love it. People are excited. People are seem to be inspired to either take an NFP class or, you know, start spreading it. So from the screening that Megan attended, we had other people attend, and they want to take it to their own parishes. So I've gotten emails from people who want to take it around and spread it. And people seem to be excited about it, but it just started. So ask me in like a month.
Yeah, which is great. And I want to add to that. You know, I'm sure we've got listeners who are like, I get an NFP. I don't really have to see the movie. No, you have to see the movie, because this is not, I would not categorize it as an NFP movie. To me, it's a history. It's a story of why we even got to the point that we're at, and not just about the prophecies that have come out of Humanae Vitae. It goes back even farther. So, you know, our faith is our history too. So I really encourage people to see this. I encourage them to talk about bringing it into their parish. And one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, Alana, because this came up in a conversation with a friend of mine who also saw the movie with me. And she said, you know, it's so amazing. And we see the dangers of the pill, and you know, there's been a lot of us who, despite being raised Catholic and longing to live a really virtuous life, got involved in contraception. You know, yeah. You know, my listeners know this, and have felt the pains and the struggles and the destruction. Honestly, the destruction that it brings into your marriage. And okay, you get to a place where you know this isn't right, and I'm going to stop. But there's something else that can happen that's very dangerous. And in some ways, I think it's more dangerous than what happens to your body, but what happens to your heart. And that is, you can be stuck still living a contraceptive mentality, even though you may not be ingesting a pill or worse, you know, having an IUD or anything like that. There's a mentality that goes with that. And so what I think is important about this movie is to break through the barriers of a mental stronghold. We have to go back to reasoning. It's always going to go back to reasoning. So that's why I really want people to see this movie, because this, I believe, could be the beginning conversation of starting to change that conversation of having a contraceptive mentality, because now you're seeing it logically for what it is and not just, oh, this was just a teaching. Because it's not. So, you know, that's something that I don't know if you've really given any thought to, that of seeing that still contraceptive mentality. You know what I mean? Is like that still, you know, using people as objects and things like that, even though there might not be a chemical form that you're using. And so I don't know if you have any thought to that. Like, do you have, are you seeing that? Do you see that there might be a connection to how this movie can begin to kind of change the rhetoric about that mentality?
I think different people mean, I hear the phrase contraceptive mentality a lot, and I'm not sure I completely understand what everybody means by it. I think I would love to know, like, I'd love to have like a Vatican given like definition of contraceptive mentality, but I think you're onto something with like using people. And it's true. We have a problem with people using each other and exploiting each other as objects and commodities. And I'm going to exploit you for whatever I can get out of you. And it's it's like with things that we are so central to our humanity, like our sex drive, as well as, you know, our appetite, our food, like the desire for children, like those things are so central to our humanity. So if we can get those central desires correct, then we're much more likely to have all the, you know, all the little desires everywhere else in our lives be correct too. So if we're using people for sex, and if we're using people for kids or money, you know, then if we're just using our spouse for not even seeing them in their full humanity and full beauty, then we're much more likely to mess up in other areas of like using people and exploiting people and whatnot. So, but I, contraceptive mentality, it's a good, the event of the screenings and the event of the movie definitely like could be a Kickstarter for people to just go home and have a conversation about like what it means to be, in line with, to be loving, you know, what does it mean to be loving?
Right. Right. Well, I think you, it's so true because at the end of that, like, and really that contraceptive mentality is that notion of, you know, kind of that turning in on yourself, and it's the use, right? And it's also, I mean, what is contraception? It's wanting something, but not the consequences, right? So of that. And, you know, shutting off life. But do we shut off life in other ways in our marriage, you know? And I don't mean like the physical life, but maybe it's a spiritual life. You know, so we can kind of fall into that trap. So your point of going back into really understanding the true foundation of it is going to be so beneficial, not just from a sexual standpoint, but from a spiritual standpoint, from a friendship standpoint, from so many other ways that we're called to love the other person. And that's what I do like about this movie, is that I do believe that it's going to be a conversation starter, because that's sometimes all we have to, that's all we're left with right now, is really kind of moving through and having these conversations, because it's you know, such a big undertaking.
Asking people to think about what they do. One point that I think, I don't know if we made it in the movie enough, but just when I was in my 20s and, you know, I was on the pill when I was 15 and I behaved accordingly. And in a very liberal culture, like downtown San Francisco, Brooklyn, New York, those are the places that I lived in. And like those guys, like hipster guys, liberal, you know, people who just love the pill, right? They don't propose. Like, they don't ask girls to marry them. They wait forever and ever and ever. And I think people are not marrying well because of the use of the pill. Like, a lot of people, they say, oh, you know, as soon as you, like, we ask engaged couples to start to learn NFP, like, once they get married. But if everyone's using the pill and they're starting, you know, starting age 15 or even 20, when they start dating, it's like they're not going to be marrying the right person, because a lot of girls will, or women will just marry the first guy that proposes to them and not someone that they're truly like meant for. So I see women, like Helen Albright made this comment, and I think it's in the movie, but she said that women, they marry guys that they're really not fit for, because those are the only guys that are willing to propose to them. And then they end up getting divorced because it's a bad marriage, because it just, in Mark Wagnaris in his book, Cheap Sex, he makes the point. It's just like, there's men don't need to ask men, women to marry them. So they don't. And it's just completely befuddled the marriage market. So this is something women need to be doing beginning in their teen years. They need to start understanding their fertility and just refusing to use the pill as teenagers.
Well, I know there's some scientific information out there on how the pill changes our bodies and the pheromones. And I know we will be doing an episode here really pretty soon about the science behind contraception. So I'm not going to get into that, but I want to kind of backtrack to what you were saying about, you know, men are using women for sex and women are using men for babies. And I really appreciate you bringing that point up, because the reality is we have become a culture of consumption. And so we just consume people for what they can give us. When we become so self-focused on our wants, then we truly cannot give anymore. And people are so lonely they're so empty because they're trying to just consume little bits of people to kind of satiate them along the way in whatever manner they're looking to be satiated. And it's really a disheartening thing to watch, and just so much hurt out there. But we become people who just use one another. And like you said, it could be for many different reasons, not just sex, but, you know, in business or whatever. But I don't have an exact question for you on that, but I just really appreciate that you have, that you bring that piece to light.
It's the human ecology. Like, the pill just threw a wrench in human ecology, so that we're having trouble with all sorts of, like, healthy human relationships, and it's the root, you know, the root has been poisoned. And it's really tough if you've got a poisoned root to just, we try to do sprinkle stuff on top to make it healthy and put more water on it. Or, you know, if I can, it's so funny the things people do to try to help their relationships. Like, you see women who are doing all this plastic surgery, like a ton of plastic surgery because why? They really think that that's what is going to fix their relationships. Like, that's going to make him love you. And, but it goes down to the core of the problem is the way we initiate our relationships, that mutual use, when a man approaches you for intimacy, he should recognize the power of your body to create a new human being. And if you can recognize that power, like, he'll respect you, because it is a powerful thing to be able to create a new person with your body.
Right.
And when we neutered ourselves, like, that's when men stopped respecting women. Like, that's in the Harvey Weinsteins of the world. They.
Right. Yeah. It's just, it's so pervasive. It's like, when you talk about it being a root, it's so true. Of course, I think the true freedom then is found when we allow Jesus to come in and deliver us from that, right? That is so deep seated that it does need to be uprooted. And I'm so thankful for our faith. You know, even when we're in times of our church that are troubled, the Holy Spirit has been just the guide and the leader for so long and has always spoken the truth. And, you know, those are the things, of course, that we cling to. So I just think this movie's a great thing. I think, you know, I love hearing your story too, because to see the way God works through all of his people is just so fascinating to me and amazing to me. And I never get tired of hearing of all the good that he is constantly doing in people's lives. It's just, it's so awesome. It's so mind-boggling. So, you know, I also want to think about I want to go back to your personal journey just a little bit, because I know this is a great movie and I really encourage people to go see it, but, you know, it doesn't sound to me as if you and your husband were like, hey, let's go make a movie. Like, it was your whole lives did a 360 based on a teaching of a church that you weren't a part of. Was my understanding at that time. I mean, you were kind of exposed to some Catholics while you were living an atheist lifestyle, right? And it was just this slow cultivation. And, you know, could you talk about that particular friendship? I think somebody invited you guys to Mass. I mean, that's a stretch, right? For a Catholic to invite two atheists to Mass. So, like, how did that come about?
Right. Well, I met my husband in Brooklyn. He's Swedish. He was on vacation from Stockholm, and we met in my backyard in Brooklyn, and he moved to America, and we got married. We had a baby, and I was working for a think tank called the Institute for American Values, which is headed by a guy named David Blankenhorn. And David Blankenhorn wrote a book called Fatherless America, Confronting America's Most Urgent Social Problem. And they had done a he became this kind of guru for social science regarding fatherlessness. And they were very interested in children who were fatherless because of sperm donation, right? So, like, deliberately fatherless. And I made friends with them because they did a report called the My Daddy's Name is Donor Report. And that was the large, they surveyed 1 million people and found a little under 500 donor-conceived people to do these research topics on. And I heard about the study and I volunteered to promote it because I believed in the findings so much. And I just really believed that a lot of my personal issues that I had were just textbook fatherlessness problems. And so I've never been a very stable person, just FYI. Like, I'm no role model, but I'm working on it. I'm working on it. And it's improved a lot thanks to John Paul II and all these amazing teachers that have entered my life. But so I was promoting this this research study, My Daddy's Name is Donor Report, and I, for the first time in my life, started to meet some Catholics and Christians. And I was so jealous of them because they seemed to have these amazing marriages. I just have the good marriage and, like, not the God part. Like, do I have to believe in God to, like, associate with people who can keep a marriage together? And I later discovered that a successful marriage kind of depends on your faith in God and your relationship to suffering and your view of eternity also, right? And my friend Lindsay Schlegel, who's an author and an amazing Catholic writer and mom, she was living pretty close. And how did I meet Lindsay? Oh, I think my friend Amber introduced us. Anyways, Lindsay lived pretty close. She lived in Brooklyn too. And she said, hey, why don't you guys come to Mass? And I was just waiting for somebody to take us to Mass. And she would just show me stuff like, oh yeah, so you kneel. This is called genuflecting. And here's the book. And, you know, every day you can just go to the page and there's all the readings. And you know, there's a statue and we actually believe that that's Jesus. Okay. So different things. And the Eucharist, like, that's actually Jesus. You know, with just confidence, she was just teaching me all these things and answering my questions. And it took a while. Like, I'm still learning a lot, but, we were going to Mass for like a year or two before we decided to actually enter the church and before we completed the RCIA program. So my husband and I converted at the same time. Our daughter was 2 when we entered the church, and now she's 6. So we're still learning, and we're still humbled every day by what we don't know. But it's a massive improvement from 10 years ago when we didn't know anything. And our friendships are better, and our parenting is so much better, truly. Like, I thought I was going to have 1 kid and be done, because that's all I thought I could handle. And now people are like, my old liberal friends are saying, wow, you have such a big family, you've got 3 kids. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I've got friends with 8 kids, like, you don't know anything. You know, like, our generosity is massively improved versus what we were 10 years ago. So
That's amazing.
Progress.
Well, I've been in the Catholic Church my whole life, and I'm still searching. No, I'm joking, but I'm not searching for him. No, it's the whole process of being a Catholic is a perpetual conversion every single day. It's constant. I mean, if it's not, I think that's maybe when we have to worry, you know, when we're not constantly searching for him all the time. And that's just part, I think, of being a Catholic too. So welcome to the family. That's usually Becky's line.
Yeah. Welcome to the church. Welcome home. That's what I usually say.
I love that line too.
I know. Doesn't it just warm your heart and you go, oh, I'm home. There's my family. There's my brothers. There are my sisters.
Yeah. It's just, whatever city you go to, you have a place, a peaceful place to go.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Amen. So we're neither. Right. Exactly. So were neither you nor your husband raised in any, with any faith background?
Not really. My grandparents were non-denominational Christians in the Bible Belt of Missouri, in a kind of town where you're either a meth addict or you go to church, you know, twice a week, and there's nothing in between.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband was, you know, they had like, there's a, the national church in Sweden is like the Lutheran church, and everybody becomes a member. Like, in order to become, to be a Swedish citizen, basically like 80% of the people are Lutheran officially, and you're baptized and you go to church on Christmas. But no, he was not raised with a strong religious background at all. So we both lost a lot of friends when we converted. You know, friends, I put in quotes, because people couldn't understand why we would join the Catholic Church with the, they didn't understand the birth control thing. They didn't, you know, the sex scandal really kind of put a black stamp on the church in their eyes. And they didn't get it. They don't ask questions about it. They just kind of, different people in my family said, oh, you joined a cult. And I'm like, well, you see those three kids walking around that you adore so much? Like, they're the result of, like, a new mindset because of this so-called cult on men. It's life-giving, and it's taken me out of a selfishness that you seem to appreciate. And that's because of my new religion. Thank you very much.
Alana, I know that our listeners can reach out. We'll have information on our show notes where they can talk about bringing this movie to their parish. And there's a real added bonus. If you guys really want to wow your friends, no, if you guys really want to get this message across, you can have the movie come. You can even do what they consider kind of a director's cut. Alana is, as we mentioned in the beginning, a songwriter and a very talented musician. So she can come, she can also perform. And in honor of that, she is going to share with us a song she wrote. And Alana, I'll let you take that away.
Okay, I really just wrote this a few days ago, so you got to forgive me, and I wasn't prepared to do this.
You heard it here first, thriving in the trenches.
John, Paul, Evelyn, and John, Paul, Evelyn, Doctor, Doctor, tell me now. See this woman's power. Can you give her back to God? Make amends for what we've lost. Doctor, doctor, show me how. Teach me about my power. Can I conversate with God? Privy myself to his plot. Help us with your intercession, heal the deep way. In our imperfections, keep us safe. Through the resurrection, we are saved. Doctor, doctor, say your vows. Can you see this evil cow? Have we underrated God? Have faith in an undone knot.
Alana, we just want to thank you so much for sharing your time and your talent and for your yes to Jesus, for your husband's yes to the Lord, and for bringing forth a beautiful family and a beautiful message.
Thank you all. Had a great time.